is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, right now we have on the line Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Bob, how are you doing?
Well, pretty good. No complaints today.
Well, I'll tell you what, of course, Bob is our guru. He keeps us abreast of what's happening in the markets, what's happening financially, what's really happening throughout the world. Because, you see, the stability of the currency, the stability of the economy, has a great deal to do with the stability of the nation. And right now, of course, the economy, they tell us, is really doing pretty well, but I don't think it's doing as well as they keep telling us. They are manipulating the stock market to keep the thing from tumbling. But I'm going to let Bob tell you what's really going on behind the scenes. Bob, what's your take on what's happening as far as the housing market is concerned? Has the bubble burst? Are we on the way down? What's the significance of the fact that the short-term interest rates are actually lower than the long-term interest rates? And we'll cover lots of things here in the near future.
Well, I think the housing market is a good place to start because it has been a catalyst for the last 5 years, and that spark that has sent the economy up along with very, very low interest rates and very easy ways to buy houses has caused a boom of epic proportions, which is now turned into a bubble, and the bubble is has been since a year ago June deflating, and now we're at a position where we're just about even. The value of homes over the last year haven't grown very much at all, and in some areas that they've gone down, and I think that probably they will continue to go down over the next few years, particularly over the next 2 years. And I foresee a correction in the hot markets of 40% and other markets are probably 35%, and markets that haven't moved won't move very much.
Yeah, well, of course, when the bubble burst in Japan, the buoyancy drops in property values a lot more dramatic than that.
Well, both... First of all, two segments. The land prices dropped over 80%.
Right, that was what I saw.
Yeah, and home prices and condo prices, they dropped in the vicinity of 72%.
Okay.
And well, the stock market,
you don't think we'll have
stock market dropped 68%.
You don't think we'll have as dramatic a drop here than as they did in Japan?
We could be in that position. It all depends on how it plays out.
All right, fine. Because I got that inversion wrong. The short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates, which suggests that there's going to be a recession. Is that right?
That's correct. And I think, from my viewpoint, the proof in the pudding is a substantial amount of time in what they call inversion. And that is the inverted yield curve, which, as you just said, puts the two-year yield higher than the 10-year yield, which is really absurd.
In other words, the short term should be lower than the long term, but it really isn't. The long
term should be half a point to a point lower.
Right, and that's the talk of the inversion. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Bob to talk about what's going on. Well, now, of course, it's said that, you know, if you have, what, 3 or 4 months with this inversion of the interest rates, that it suggests we're really in a recession or certainly in some sort of an economic slowdown. Would that be a fair assessment?
It is, and the 3 months of inversion, straight inversion, continuous inversion will be up at the end of this week. And those funds were 5 basis points apart, with the two being higher today. So we've got 3 days to go, and that's my benchmark. And out of the last 12 times that that's happened, 11 times we had a recession. And if you put together all of the other problems within the economy, both economic and financial, then you get some blockbuster stuff going.
Well, now, do you really believe that this everything is being manipulated at the present time because of the upcoming November elections?
Absolutely. Today was a wonderful example of it. The stock market was up. All commodities, gold and silver, are down. Bonds moved up just a smidgen, so we'll say they were unchanged. And the dollar was up a minuscule amount, but it was up. And, you know, with all the problems the American economy has, the dollar should be much lower. And it's not much lower because of the manipulation that continues to be done by the United States government and the Federal Reserve.
But, of course, they've got to have the help of the other central banks throughout the world. We can't do that without their help, can we? Don't all the central banks work pretty much in tandem?
We can, but it's from their point of view, it's nice to have the help. And I can assure you they're all in on it.
All right.
And some to a greater extent than others. And the problem is, with minor exception, everybody's got a fiat currency. And that's why for the last year and a half that all currencies have been going down. And I mean all currencies have been going down against the price of gold. And that's going to continue.
But yet, of course, they knocked down the price of gold. Gold's off its high here, down to less than the $600. What was it, $580, $590 today? And silver's down. The price of what the precious metals, which you would expect would be going up, has really certainly been knocked down considerably. And so how are they doing that?
Well, there's a number of ways. And
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment,
sure.
Dear. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapin, and Bob is, we're just simply talking about, you know, what's happening to the economy. We're talking about how they're able to manipulate the price of gold and silver and the other commodities. So, basically, now certainly copper is doing very, very well. Of course, gold and silver up considerably from where they were, but they're way off their high from about 2 or 3 months ago. So what's your take on how are they knocking the price of gold and silver down when they should be soaring because of the fact that the whole world is on an artificial monetary system? They're all fiat currencies with absolutely nothing behind them, and I believe that the whole world economy is on the verge of financial disaster, and yet gold and silver, which should be soaring, are simply getting knocked down.
Well, I think that's mostly pointed at the professional market, and the reason why is if the professionals see that gold is continuing to climb, they'll know that they're going to have problems in other markets. The public doesn't understand. You know, if you go back to the last gold and silver move in 1980, if you were 25 years old, you might have known what was going on, and probably didn't. And so you can probably cut that to about 5% of 25-year-olds in 1980 knew what was going on. Well, they're 50 years old now. So everybody over 50 may have known what was going on. But the important thing is that everybody under 50 doesn't have a clue. So they don't know what's going on here. They don't know the significance of gold. They haven't seen why gold does what it does. It's not a harbinger to them. That's why we have no savings today. If savings is minus 1.7%. And that's because nobody cares. They live for the day and heck with tomorrow. And they've been taught to leverage everything. And in the final analysis, what's going to happen is that bad times always follow good. And to a lesser or greater degree. And so the chances of having a fallout and those people being financially and economically injured is very, very good. And I do believe that that's what's going to happen. I got a letter today from an unemployed electrical engineer because I had mentioned that in Alberta, in Canada, there's plenty of jobs available, whereas there isn't for many professions and skills in America. And I told him in an email, I just said, contact the Canadian consulate because maybe there's a job for you up there, and the chances are pretty good that there is. I mean, importing people into your country who are illiterate like we do, we get 30 million illiterates in our country illegally, and we are not drawing very many people with PhDs or masters or even degrees. And so I would think that Canada and the province of Alberta, especially seeing that it's a natural resource province, that they'd be very happy to have him. But this is what we're up at, against in America. And we're losing very, very good people. And what's coming up behind us is disastrous. I saw CNBC do a program today, and then I got the OECD report, and they said that the U.S. educational system is a disaster. So.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, but how are they keeping the price of gold and silver down? In other words, are they dumping gold and silver on the market? Are they doing this by commodity manipulation? Are they doing this by selling short in the market? And what's the real basis as far as silver is concerned? I mean, we've been hearing for years we were running out of silver, but every year there seems to be enough silver to meet the demand.
Well, it's a combination of things. Number one, you have market makers who are working in the market, and you also have them working with the United States government. And so our government, essentially, economically, is our enemy because they're rigging all the markets, which means all of the investors are getting cheated. But our government doesn't care about that. All they care about is their end theme, which is world government. And what they've done here is they've used sometimes gold or silver bullion that they happen to have to sell in the market. But that's becoming less and less and less prevalent. What they're doing is shorting, naked shorting, and they're doing derivatives and naked puts, which are derivatives. And the cash naked put is probably the main villain in the markets today. I don't think there's very much gold being sold at all because I don't think they have that much left. It's my estimate they probably get about 5,000 tons, and they say they have 31,000 tons. And you and I both know governments don't tell the truth about anything.
Yeah, but what about silver? There should be a shortage of silver developing, you would think, because certainly the use seems to be exceeding the production, yet there always seem to be new supplies coming on board. Is there going to be a real shortage one of these days that's going to drive the price of silver up? And if so, do you have any idea when it may happen?
Well, I think in the next couple of years it's going to happen. I think it depends in part on the economy and how quickly it slows down. The economy is going to slow down. It has begun to slow down. I believe the recession started in January. People aren't noticing it yet because they don't understand the subtle manifestations. They just find out when they get there, when it's already probably at a peak or almost over, and so they don't know.
fine. Well, certainly, as we begin looking at the production figures for the United States, you know, they keep telling us that our productivity is increasing. But is the productivity of the average worker actually increasing? In other words, for our listeners, productivity is the unit cost of items. In other words, how much does it actually cost as far as labor for to build an item? And they keep telling us, oh, it's going down all the time because productivity is increasing. Isn't it wonderful? But is that really true?
Yes, it is on the face of it, but not the figures they give you. Alan Greenspan, for a number of years, explained the bubble in the stock market by saying, oh, we've got a 5, 6, 7% increase in productivity, and that's why all this can happen. Well, Alan Greenspan was lying. The increase in productivity at that time probably was 3.25% or something on that level. Now, historically, since the Second World War, productivity has increased an average each year of 2.5%. And if wages went up 2.5%, it was a push. I believe that productivity has been about 2.5%, and just recently it's dropped to about 1.5%. Whether it'll stay there or not, I don't know. And I think part of that drop is that people are losing all their benefits, and they're not working as hard. They're saying, look what we did for the last 7 or 8 years. We got no wage increases until this year. We had to scream and yell to get them. And they're taking our benefits away. We have no future. So why should we work hard anymore? It's not worth it. Corporate America has screwed themselves. They'll never get productivity back where it was before unless something really large happens within the economic structure in our country.
Well, certainly we're seeing real problems as far as the pension funds are concerned, and we see the Delta Airlines has dropped their pension fund this last week or so, and so many of the major corporations are dropping the pension funds and really cutting back on medical benefits and other benefits, aren't they?
Yes, and the biggest request for jobs is for people who are over 65 who can't live on retirement. Only 20% of people have company retirement. And so that means 80% only have Social Security. And I don't know what the average Social Security check is, but I'll guess at $900 a month. And pretty hard to live on $900 a month for one person, never mind more than one. And if you take the average and you've got two people, that's $1,800. And that's really not fair because usually during a lifetime, a female does not accumulate the credits that a male does because women have children and women are paid less than men are. So if the man's getting $900, the wife probably would get about $700. So the figure's about $1,600. And again, that's about $18,000 a year, and that is below poverty level.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think that a lot of Americans really are going to feel the pinch before long. I think there's a long-range plan really to destroy the middle class in America. People find that hard to believe, that anybody could have an organized, orchestrated program to destroy the welfare of our people, but I believe that there is. I believe that they want to transfer the wealth of the United States middle class to people in other countries, and we're really not going to increase their standard of living that far. We're just going to drag the standard of living for the American people down, and after all, though, if God is just, and you would think that he would eventually, in one way or another, bring judgment on America. Perhaps a financial judgment. We're in for, I think, some very difficult times, and we'll be back in just a moment with our good friend Bob Chapman. Well, Bob, of course, as we talk about what's going on, it really doesn't sound too optimistic as far as the industrial future of America, the manufacturing future of America, the economic future of our people. Would you agree or disagree with that? And what can the average person do to protect themselves?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's going to be difficult. And not only is it going to be a financial and economic problem, it's an emotional problem. the average American's never had a bad day in his life or her life, and they're not going to be able to handle this. I know what Americans are like today, and I know what they were like in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, and the character was totally different. And I think they're going to have a terrible time adjusting to the economic carnage that I see ahead. And we're already into it. There's no stopping it. They had a chance in 1992. They could have cleared this problem all up, but they chose not to. And I know that now is almost a generation ago. As they say in Latin, in tempus fugit, which means time flies, and people make the same silly general mistakes over and over again. And so we can expect that. And I don't know that there's very much people can do other than getting themselves out of debt, particularly credit card and revolving debt, and then getting gold and silver-related assets, gold and silver coins and shares, shares for those who have more money than they know what to do with and they like to speculate. And the only alternative I see to that is for people who have lots and lots of money. If they don't want to put everything in gold and silver-related assets, they could put money into Swiss franc bonds or Canadian dollar bonds. They would be treasury bonds of those countries, and the yields are very low, but the currencies are very strong. And but other than that, I see nothing. And sometimes a special situation will come along within the stock market, but that's rare, because what happens is, even if you get something extraordinary, if the market's going down, it has a hard time going up.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, as we're watching and seeing this whole incredible scenario unfold, and we see, I think one of the most interesting things is, now they're really going to dramatically raise the cost of Medicare for senior citizens. If you make over $80,000 a year, single, or $160,000 a year for two people, they're going to double, triple, and then quadruple by 2009, they're going to start quadrupling the cost of Medicare for the senior citizens who've been promised by the government that they're going to take care of their health care, you know, at a minimal cost, and now they're going back on that promise. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I noticed it today, and all I can say is that, again, your government is your enemy. And, you know, that's why the framers of the Constitution did what they did, because they know that government is the enemy of the people. They know you only have government to do certain limited tasks, and if it gets beyond that, like
Hold
Medicare,
that thought.
Medicaid,
we'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. One of the really interesting things is the announcement that the government is going to start raising the cost of Medicare insurance to the elderly. Now, if you are very, very poor, why, of course, you're going to be able to get it very, very cheaply, as we have in the past. But if you make over $80,000 a year as an individual, or if you have over $160,000 a year as a couple, why, they're going to start raising the Medicare premiums to double, triple, quadruple. By 2009, they're going to quadruple the cost of Medicare in insurance, and I think it's because it was something like $88 a month now. It's going to, well, you can imagine what quadrupling that will be, and that's simply the primary insurance. The secondary insurance costs another couple of $100 a month, so you're going to be paying out $500 a month for health care insurance. And, of course, they're saying, well, you know, some of these selfish people might just leave Medicare and buy private health insurance, because it'll probably be a lot cheaper. They're lowering the fees for doctors, so a lot of the good doctors can't afford to take Medicare. Every time why the cost of Medicare goes up, they cut back on the doctors to the point where a doctor's not making anywhere near today what they did when I was practicing medicine. They're blaming the doctors for a program that was doomed to fail from the very beginning, and the government knew it. And 15 years ago, I was told we were doing exactly what they're doing today. They told me that there was going to be a two-tiered Medicare system, one for the elderly, where people would have private insurance, and one for the poor, where they'd leave them to die. So go ahead, at least that, you know, they would be able to get government-subsidized insurance, but it just wouldn't be very good because nobody would be, doctors wouldn't be afforded to take it. So pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, when they try national health in other countries, it's prohibitively expensive, and it doesn't work well. You go to Canada, you have to wait several months for an operation, and sometimes it's a vital operation, and if you can't get that operation, say in 12 or 14 months, you're dead. And I believe that you're going to see a time come when anybody who is over 65 gets ill, and it's a serious illness, they'll just dispatch you. And I see that coming big time.
Of course, the alternative would be if you have the money, you'd go over to Thailand or go to Mexico or some country where they have at least a free medical system and, you know, at least a free practice of medicine where you can get your surgeries done much lower in Thailand, you know, a fraction of what you'd pay here in the United States. Then they have top-notch, well-trained doctors, many of them trained in America when America was the leading, you know, source of medical training in the world.
Well, even closer is Mexico.
Right.
You can get a bypass operation for, you know, all in for $20,000, and the same operation ranges from $100,000 to $150,000 in the United States.
And that is really because of government interference in the healthcare delivery system. There is no problem facing organized medicine today that a new government program won't make worse. And I think that the average individual doesn't understand that our founding fathers, you know, limited what the federal government could do. The fascist element in our society has always wanted to get everybody dependent upon the government so they could control them. And that's exactly what they've done. They got the doctors to go into the system by lining their pockets with gold, then making them all sorts of promises that they knew they would never keep. And they did the same thing with the patients. And now we're moving towards a crisis in healthcare, and America is moving from, you know, the greatest nation in the world medically to a second-rate nation, and our educational system is turning out kids that cannot compete throughout the world, all because of government interference, and of course the fact that they're poisoning our children with fluoride and with mercury and certainly with aspartame and all these other things. They know the harmful effect on the brain, and when our kids graduate from high school, they cannot compete, you know, with children who graduate in other countries where they're not poisoning their children and using poisons to lower their IQs. So I think we've got real problems.
That's true, and I think one more step in education is that for a long time they have taught to the lowest common denominator in the class. So if you have 23 people, which is the average class size in America, and you've got three very bright people, and you've got another six that are nominally bright, they have to wait for the people with the 60 and 70 and 80 IQs to catch up. And it's bad. It's very, very bad. And you can't leave these children behind because it will be a terrible thing for them sociologically.
Okay.
And so the whole system is skewed, and it started in 28 with Dewey. And it's going to continue to get worse until parents demand that it be stopped.
Of course, in China, in the areas where they have fluoridated water, they got a lot of kids with an IQ of, you know, 70. They just don't have any geniuses anymore. They've wiped out, you know, all the geniuses in those areas. And that, I believe that's happening right here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're talking about what's going on in America. We've been touching on education. Bob, what are the really important issues you'd like to bring up for our listeners tonight?
Well, I think that they have to understand what they see going on right now in the economy is being done because there's an election coming. 3 weeks ago, I said the international forecaster that oil would drop from 73 to between $60 and $65 a barrel, and the reason for that is that they want gasoline prices down to 250, and they're at 253 in Florida right now. And they are also knocking down the price of commodities deliberately so that people will think, especially professionals, that inflation's going to end and this diminution in the value of commodities is going to continue. And they've been in the bond market, and they've been keeping yields down and bonds up, and they do that by monetizing them. That means they buy them and take delivery of them. The problem is that the Fed, when it goes to buy them, creates some money out of thin air. And they're holding the stock market up so everybody will think nothing is wrong. And so this is the song and dance that we're going through here. And it's very misleading. The public doesn't understand, and many of the professionals don't either. Most people go through university, even if they take business courses, and even if they have economics 1 and 2, they still don't learn anything about the real world in those classes. Maybe something, but very little. I didn't learn anything. And in fact, I was lucky I passed economics. But anyway, that's the situation the public is in. They don't know, even the professionals don't. They don't know how to gradate what's going on within the economy because there's so many pressures on them. And the pressures are to make everything look good so the corporate earnings will continue, to make everything look good so that Wall Street and banking can make more money and make everything look good for all of those parties because the politicians want to get elected. Re-elected in this case.
And I think that's exactly right. I think that's a very, very astute observation in your part. They are manipulating the price of oil down. I believe it'll go up after the elections, but then, of course, it will be too late. The last thing they want is for people to be concerned about what's happening to our economy with the election coming up so soon. Hold on. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob Chapman was just saying that he really believes that they are intentionally lowering the price of oil as a result of lowering the price of gasoline because the elections are coming up and they want the American people to feel a fat, dumb, and happy and everything's so good and the economy is good and the stock market's doing good, and it's all being done for the psychological impact on the minds of the people. For as Edward Bernays wrote so well in his book Propaganda, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. And that's exactly what they're doing today. The elections are coming. Why they want, of course, to keep the same people in office, the last thing they would want would be a revolt of the voters and new parties and new blood put in. After all, they want people that they can control. They want congressmen and senators. They've got something on. They've been there for a long time. They vote the way they're supposed to. They say what they're supposed to say. It's all showbiz. Well, before we go on, Bob, I want you to get out your telephone number, your email. How can people get in touch with you and get a trial subscription to the International Forecaster and, of course, be able to, get your vitally important information?
Well, the International Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. By email, we publish twice a week and in hard copy twice a month. We have a toll-free number, and if you call it, you can get a free introductory copy of the publication. That number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. If you'd like to visit our site, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. theinternationalforecaster, F-O-R-E-C-A-S-T-E-R, .com. We'll be happy to send you a copy.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, if you'd like to talk to Bob, if you have a question for him, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America. And here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Bob has made the point over and over again that the when you see the interest rates inverted, in other words, when you see the short-term interest rates higher than the long-term interest rates, well, this is what's known as inversion. And after that's been in place for 3 months, well, it's actually cheaper to buy to borrow long than to borrow short. This has foretold a coming recession. That's been a very, very valid economic sign for a long period of time, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And chances of it working are probably 99.9 out of 100. And so we're in recession. We're headed deeper. And how far we go remains to be seen. I don't see any way that can get out of it.
Well, what about the interest rates? Certainly the Fed did not raise interest rates last time. But do you think they're going to be forced to raise interest rates because of what's happening as far as inflation is concerned? Do you think they'll just sit back and hope that things are going to be all right?
Well, I think what they're faced with here is election time. So they're not going to raise interest rates until after the election. And I don't think they'll do it during November or December because of Christmas sales. So January would be the logical month if they were going to do that. And they may just keep them where they're at, even though it'll feed inflation, because if they lower interest rates again, I can promise you the dollar will crash. And so I don't really think it's an option unless they want the dollar to crash. Now, that could be as well because they have this horrific current account deficit, which is somewhere near $800 billion this year, which is about 6.4%, 6.5% of gross domestic product, which has never been there before. And they believe that if they were to lower interest rates, the economy could recover, and maybe we wouldn't have a crash in the real estate market, or maybe we could at least temporarily put off a strong recession. But on the other hand, that option is not really a good one, because if they lower interest rates, then foreigners who supply us with $3 billion a day in investment funds, money that we've already sent out, if they're not getting a decent return because of inflation or because the rates aren't high enough, they're going to sell their dollar assets. So they're kind of caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. And I see people already talking about a lowering of rates early next year. Well, let them go do it.
Well, of course,
gold will go through the roof, silver will go through the roof, and the dollar will collapse.
Well, of course, as we see what's going on, what's happening now as far as the M3 is concerned, these figures that they are trying to conceal from the American people. I noticed that the according to your latest forecaster, the M2 figure, it's actually fallen about $6 billion here in this last few weeks. So that would almost look like that maybe they're beginning to contract the money supply. Is that accurate, or is that just a statistical fluke?
Well, I don't know whether it's a fluke or not, but I do know that, yes, they did decrease the money supply. And as you know, we publish, and we're the only ones in the world that I know of that do, an estimated M3, which the Federal Reserve said it was too expensive to produce anymore, so they wanted to get rid of it, and they wanted to get rid of it so nobody would know what they're doing. But they are still increasing credit and loans, and that far outperforms the creation of money. If you look at last Wednesday's forecast, which you have, you'll see that we have a paragraph in there on our estimate of M3 right now, and it is down about 3/8 of a percentage point, we'll say from 9.2 to 8.7%, but it's only 1 month. In order to set a trend, you have to have 3 months.
Well, of course, that really is.
You know, I watch those figures very carefully.
But actually, of course, they were up to a 10 or 11%, so if they're getting down, it would suggest that they're beginning to contract the availability of money and credit.
Well, it's this credit that's created outside of the M3, and there's also the euro dollars, which are involved, which I won't go into because it's too esoteric. But there are other measures that take the M3 in totality, if you had them all in there, up to between 11% and 12%. And so, but we'll just use their figures, and we'll watch them as a guide. And I believe that they'll continue to feed it, and I think you'll see money and credit increase the next time we put a report out. But we're not going to argue with the inevitable either. If we get 3 months in a row, we'll know that inflation's going to slow down, and we're probably going to have a very, not only stiff recession, but maybe a depression.
In other words, if they continue to limit the availability of credit and all of these other things. This is
correct.
What you're saying.
Correct.
So you're going to keep us appraised of it, and I think that's really one of the most significant things about the International Forecaster. Once you understand that our prosperity is built upon an illusion, that illusion is paper money. And there's nothing really that is more dangerous, more deceitful, than this illusion of the value of paper money. But as long as everybody's going along with it, why, nobody really is too concerned until, of course, they contract the value of the amount of money that's available in an effort to save at least some stability for the currency. So it appears that they may, at least these may be the very early stages of beginning to cut back on that in an effort to preserve some stability for our currency. Would that be a fair statement or not?
I think it is, and they're trying to weave an extraordinarily complicated web. And I don't think any human being or any group of human beings are capable of doing that. And the reason why is that economics and finance, believe it or not, are not exact sciences. What they are is art forms. And you take a little bit of this and you shake in a little bit of that, and the only way you're good at it is through experience, learning what doesn't work.
Because that's why Bob Woodward wrote a book about Alan Greenspan, and he called him Maestro. In other words, he was the conductor of this symphony that was our economy. It was booming. He was really so successful, and as long as he was there, he kept expanding the money supply and expanding it and expanding it and expanding it and encourage all sorts of unsound investments. And you can have a great time living on money that's artificial for a time, but then, of course, you leave, and you leave it up to Ben Bernanke to try to make some sense and out of this whole house of cards that Alan Greenspan, the maestro, had actually created.
Well, that's why I do what I do, so I can now act independent of what they're doing. They've done me and my subscribers a favor, but they're 99.999% of the American people, they're not getting helped at all, and they're going to get caught in this downdraft that's going to come, and many will lose their homes. And for the middle class and lower middle class and below, 80% of people's assets are in their homes. Their wealth is in their homes. And if you have today, without savings, if you have a correction of 40% in a home in Southern California, and your home's $300,000, that makes it worth $180,000, and that's enough to wake you up. And then maybe they'll start searching for some answers. But until that time, the public just doesn't want to know, and that's why we see extraordinarily limited activity today in the gold, silver sphere in general, or even in commodities in general. The public doesn't know, doesn't understand, and won't.
They won't until it's far too late, and then, of course, they will end up, certainly, as a gentleman named Jacques Attali was talking about in his book, Millennium, written in 1990, talking about what the future holds. They'll end up like the living dead, simply wandering every place looking for a means of sustenance and a job. And there aren't going to be any. There are going to be some very wealthy people, and then, of course, a whole host of impoverished people throughout the land. And really throughout the world, which is really what they're looking for, I believe, will be a two-tiered society, the feudal lords, and then a mass number of serfs. Well, Bob, of course, as far as investment in gold and silver stock, they haven't been doing very well, at least in the last 6 months or so. They had a spurt, but they seem to be pretty well leveled off, haven't they? They're just sort of sitting there, and they've been sitting there for a long time.
Well, I saw the figures from Friday. Today, from TOCOM in Tokyo, which is the commodity exchange in Tokyo, and there was an awful lot of short covering in gold, a big short covering. And there's about seven dealers who are the main, they do 98% of the shorts, and they were covering like mad. So I believe that we could be seeing a bottom here, possible. And that's only one market. We've got the COMEX and the CBOT as well. And then there's the markets in London and so on. But it could be the start of something interesting. And when the shorts begin to cover, that gives buyancy to the percentage of used gold, to the price of gold, because there's not that more. The sellers have turned into buyers, and what they're doing is putting a platform underneath the price.
Well, now, do you think that...
Whether it's here or not, I don't know, but we're getting close.
Well, do you think that the price of gold and silver will remain down until after the elections, or do you think they may move up again?
Oh, yeah, they'll go up again.
But, I mean, do you think they'll go up before the elections is what I really meant?
It's possible in the last couple of weeks, but... I don't know what their objective is. Is it 650 or obviously not? Is it 580? Maybe. Is it 550, 540? Maybe. We won't know until we get there.
All right. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you can't figure out where you are unless you know where you came from. That's in essence what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're in the blind because we have this tremendous force that we're dealing against. They're going to win a lot of battles, but they are not going to win the war. We're going to win the war, but in this process, you have to be patient. You have to invest, and you have to stick with it. You can't trade in and out like a jackrabbit. You only trade when you have to, and if you have to, you do parallel moves. Like if you sell something in gold, you better buy something else so you don't lose your place or your position. It's a very, very serious thing that we're talking about, and you're very fortunate to be listening to such a program like this because very few of them exist.
Well, of course, the college is called, and they want to know how long you think the price of oil will be down. Do you think it'll go back up after the election?
The following day. If you think for one second that the major oil producers of the world and the big oil companies, such as British Petroleum and Royal Dutch Shell and all the big American companies, if you think that they're going to put up with $60 a barrel oil, forget it. And, you know, one of the things is that the deal that was made between the Muslim Arab countries that are producing oil is we'll protect you, but you've got to recycle all your money through us. And so what's been going on for the last year and a half or so is that they've been pouring money into U.S. treasuries and agencies. And they do that by running it through England. I had a question from a subscriber this afternoon about that. And I said, it's not the British who are buying the treasuries. It's the oil-producing nations, because it's their part of their deal with the U.S. government.
All right, fine, of course. But, of course, if things get bad, especially if they begin to doubt whether America is going to be the a real leader, if America can't get things straightened out in Iraq, we're pulling out of Anwar province there. We're almost ceding Fallujah and the adjacent cities out of the terrorists. President Bush claims we're losing. We're winning the war. Well, the military says we're losing. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Rick calling from Texas. Rick, you had a quick question. We're almost out of time.
Yeah. Did you see what happened Monday and 9/11 with silver? Silver has been up around 13, 1280 into 1320, somewhere around there. It ends up around 1280. And then in one day, it started out 1180. It went, the high was 1270 or 1280, and it ended up at 1111.
Of course, what they're doing, they're playing games with these things. And that's why you certainly don't want to be speculating in this. You'll be motivated by greed. You'll be motivated by fear. You'll end up being frankly, psychotic. What are you
talking about? 11-11 on 9-11. 11-11. And it was up around 13 for like a week or so.
What are your thoughts?
It hadn't been down around there for a couple months.
I know. What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, again, the markets are being rigged. And the market makers are working in league with the government. And it's no secret. I mean, they admit it. And so all of the things that we talk about, they're realistic. They're things that have and will continue to happen as long as they can make them happen. And overwhelming buying will eventually supersede what they're doing. And we've done very well thus far. We had gold at 252 in the year 2000, and it's been as high as 730. It's not where it should be, but that's not the point. The point is we have been winning against them, and we will continue to do so.
Now, Rick, our job is to get the American people educated as to what's going on, you know, politically, economically, spiritually, and I hope you'll help us get people listening, get them thinking, get them understanding, you know, and get them prepared for some very difficult times that lie ahead.
But I think that's an awful strange number to end up on 11-11-11.
I think it is. I think it could be a coincidence, or maybe it's sort of a diabolical joke.
Well, I think these guys are absolutely, I think they're into numerology, and I think they're absolutely insane.
Well, you may very well be right. You go to Washington, D.C., you'll find, I think, either 23 or 27 signs of the Zodiac in government buildings, the complete Zodiac, and over 1,000 figures from the Zodiac all throughout Washington, D.C. They're big into astrology. Believe me, they are. And, of course, many of our presidents, including, of course, FDR and Ronald Reagan, were dedicated to astrology.
Well, David Rockefeller's 90 now. Maybe he's getting senile, but that seems awful strange to the way it just...
Yeah,
hey, he's right.
Yeah,
he's right. It is
almost
rigged.
It's almost impossible to explain, isn't it? Hey, good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bob, are you still there?
I certainly am.
I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Always a pleasure. And look forward to talking to you later.
All right. Thank you, and good night.
Good night. I'm going to find this Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and of course this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and getting our tapes of the month. And if you want to know more about that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I want to mention we're having our yearly annual Radio Liberty Seminar. It's going to be on the 29th of October. It's going to be on a Sunday, only day we could get the conference hall, but we're going to have Constance Cumbie and Chris Pinto and Barrett Schultz will be there. A lot of people that are regular guests here. Michael Shaw will be talking. It'll be a great time. If you want to come, you're going to have your reservation. We have to know how many people are coming. We're serving lunch. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I'm pleased with the number of people already signing up, so give us a call. And then, of course, we want to mention we are carrying emergency foods because we think we're in for some difficult times, and we'll be glad to send you a food catalog, a health catalog, including all the books and things that we carry. And, of course, we do carry the Berkey products, the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. And then, of course, we carry simply videos and four tape sets and books and all these things that you need to understand what's going on. We're involved in a spiritual battle. And behind everything that's going on are powerful spiritual forces. There is another dimension. We'd like to get our material on that. Of course, we have things like Hostage to the Devil, the story of five exorcisms. And you can get that by itself or as part of the Malachi Martin special with the four tapes set by Malachi Martin. And, of course, Malachi wrote the book Hostage to the Devil. We have a great new DVD. It's called The Rape of the Soul. It goes into obscene and pornographic art in religious institutions. Obscene and pornographic art, you'll actually see it. The full-length picture, this was a full-length picture. It was actually shown in 12 major markets for up to 9 weeks earlier this year, which is phenomenal. Totally blacked out by the media. They do not want you to understand. If you don't believe the media is controlled, you need to get the book, The New Media Monopoly, written by a professor up at Berkeley, Ben Bekdakin. Our media, 90 to 95% of the American media, is controlled by five mega corporations who control what you think. That's how they've been put over the scam as far as 911 and to conceal from the American people that there were military exercises that morning that feigned hijacking planes. And they kept putting all the false images on these screens, on these television screens there at the FAA and the NORAD. So the people did not know whether it was real hijackings or whether it was part of the simulated hijackings. And then they sent all of our planes that were supposed to guard Washington, D.C., up to Canada and Alaska to get them away so there'd be no protection for our nation's capital. Do you think that the Osama bin Laden was smart enough to do that, or do you think maybe there was somebody in government? We don't know who they are, but there were people working within some of our intelligence agencies who wanted an incident that would justify getting us into a war. Nobody wants to talk about why Building 7 came down. Please go to the Internet, Google in Building Number 7 and watch those videos over and over again. It was a controlled demolition. They say, well, the building was hit from the top, and it may have been hit from the top, so why did it collapse from the bottom? And you need to see those videos. And then ask yourself, am I going to believe what the controlled media tells me, or am I going to believe my lying eyes? And I hope you'll believe your lying eyes. And we've got to get the American people to understand that they murdered 3,000 Americans. And, you know, if they're willing to murder 3,000 Americans and then cover it up, what else are they willing to do? Well, we know that they killed 58 million Americans in Vietnam in a war we never tried to win, and 44 million in Korea in a nation war they never tried to win. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and well, right now, of course, we'll ask you to hold your calls until such time as we ask for them, but we have on the line Tim Goodrich, and I understand he's from, is it Veterans Against the War in Iraq, or what is the official title, Tim?
Well, I am one of the co-founders of Iraq Veterans Against the War, but the latest project that I've been working on is Iraq Veterans for Progress, which is a political action committee.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you tell us what motivates you? What do you think we should pursue the war in Iraq? Do you think we should pull out of Iraq? Do you think we should simply try to get the United Nations to take over? What should we do at the present time?
Well, as we know, the war in Iraq is not going well, and it has not been going well since its inception. And the current course is a costly course for the United States, not only in terms of our soldiers' lives and injuries over there, with almost 2,700 dead, 20,000 wounded, and 40,000 medically evacuated, in addition to the $315 billion that has been spent. But really what we need to do is change the course in Iraq. And that's what Iraq Veterans for Progress is all about, is helping candidates that are running on the federal level in November and helping them to get elected, knowing that they're going to do something differently in Iraq to eventually bring our troops home.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the argument that's going to be used against that is if we pull out of Iraq, there's going to be just chaos there, and we're never going to be able to install a democracy in Iraq. How would you counter that?
Well, that is a valid argument, but at the same time, if we pull out of Iraq, sure, we don't know what's going to happen. However, if we stay there, we do know what is going to happen, and that's just a continually escalating violent situation over there, which has been the trend since the beginning. For example, when I was there in January of 2004, there were less than 200 attacks per week on U.S. forces. Now that number stands at 800 attacks.
No. Were you over there in the military? In what capacity were you there?
Well, my story is a little different than most. I am an Air Force combat veteran, having taken part in Operation Enduring Freedom, which is Afghanistan operations. And I totally bought into that. In fact, I have pictures of me with a smile on my face while I was signing these bombs that were about to be dropped over that country. What really changed my viewpoint about the United States foreign policy was my final deployment, and I was over in Saudi Arabia. We were helping to patrol the no-fly zones over Iraq. This had been going on since 1991, after the first Gulf War. Well, at this point, 6 months before the war started, August through October 2002 is when I was over there, the threat from Iraq was emerging, or supposedly emerging, according to our administration officials. But Bush was saying we're going to still try diplomacy first. Well, at the same time, what I saw with my own two eyes was we were essentially preparing for the war that was to come 6 months later. The bombing increased a minimum of 500% over our previous bombing.
And I think that's really what the great, great tragedy of this whole thing is, that it was totally unnecessary. And for those of you who read my newsletters, you'll find out that Saddam had agreed to go to another country to leave. The Iraqi government had offered to let us come in and supervise elections. The Bush administration did not want a peaceful solution. They, of course, wanted a military conquest. They got one. A large part of it, of course, I think, was certainly getting the Iraqi generals to get their men just to lay down their weapons, not to fight, because we promised them, why, we're only here because we want to get rid of Saddam Hussein. You know, you lay down your weapons, the military will stay, you'll have your pensions, the military will be intact, and you can take over control of your country. And you know what? We lied to them. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Tim Goodrich, and of course, as everybody knows, first thing we did when we got in there was dissolve the Iraqi army. then we dissolve the Iraqi police force, and we dissolve the Iraqi civil service, because there were some Sunnis in it, and who had been, and of course, after all, Saddam was a Sunni, and they were Sunnis, so they obviously had to be wicked and bad, and people don't understand. You had to be, if you wanted to work for the government, why, you know, you had to go along with the system. There were a lot of the generals who hated Saddam Hussein, who would love to have done away with him. In fact, on two occasions in the 1990s, according to the book See No Evil by Robert Baer, which we carry, on two occasions, the military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and on both occasions, why the American State Department betrayed those generals who were then arrested, tortured to death by Saddam Hussein, who was such a good friend of Donald Rumsfeld, and the Bush administration, who backed Saddam all the way up until 1990, when they told him to go ahead and invade Kuwait, and when he did, then they had an excuse for war. And maybe the people who financed Saddam Hussein and backed Saddam Hussein and gave him the poison gas are just as evil and wicked as Saddam Hussein himself. Well, pick up the story there, Tim.
Well, yeah, continuing on with my story, sorry it took so long to explain it. It's not an easy thing to lay out for people. People tend to get confused because, you know, or it's been covered up, the fact that this bombing increased 6 months before the war even started. Well, seeing that, I started realizing that if I was going to be stuck in the middle of this war, I better know something about it. So I started doing some research. I had the internet in the middle of the desert over there, and started off and started learning about foreign policy, which was kind of ironic because, you know, you join the military, you're implementing U.S. foreign policy, but oftentimes people don't know enough about it. So I started learning all these different things, such as under the sanctions, the malnutrition that was happening to the Iraqi people, the birth defects from the use of radiological weapons during the first Gulf War, and so on and so on.
You're talking about depleted uranium.
Yes, that's right.
Right, go ahead.
Which is actually a misnomer. I prefer the term radiological weapons
right,
because there's
fine.
Nothing depleted about it.
All right. Go ahead.
Anyway.
Right ahead. I'm not disagreeing with your interpretation at all.
Okay. And anyway, realizing that Iraq was not a credible threat when, in fact, we were 150 miles away from Iraq's border, and Donald Rumsfeld is claiming that they could attack us with a weapon in 45 minutes, 8,500 miles away in the U.S., I realized that they were not a threat, and that the reasons for going to war with Iraq were false. So I came back home, I finished my deployment overseas.
Hold that thought, Tim. We'll be back here in just a moment. Here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Tim Goodrichsen. He's basically saying that he had actually, when he was over there, and were you in Saudi Arabia? Where is it?
Tim? Saudi Arabia is where we were flying.
And, of course, he was actually beginning to read about what was going on in Iraq, found out about the 500,000 Iraqi children who died because of the sanctions we imposed, about the children who are being born with birth defects because of the radiological warfare. He's referring, of course, to depleted uranium. And he realized, of course, that when Donald Rumsfeld was talking about the terrible threat that we were all in, we were about to be attacked by Saddam Hussein, he realized it was all a lie. And so when he got out of the military, and pick up the story there, Tim.
Well, I got out of the military shortly after the war started. And 8 months later, having been speaking out a little bit here and there, my name went to somebody who was organizing a fact-finding delegation to go into Iraq, a delegation of 7 people. And they asked me if I wanted to join this delegation, knowing that I had taken part in this war. And ironically and surprisingly, part of the reason I got out of the military, not wanting to have anything to do with this war, not wanting to go to Iraq, I accepted immediately. And within 2 weeks, I was on a plane into Amman, Jordan, where we then traveled the long highway into Baghdad, where we stayed for 2 weeks. And we visited with hundreds of civilians, talked to them, met with politicians, went to the hospitals, went to the schools, and basically just saw what life is like from the other side.
No, but now, was this before or after the American attack?
This was after. This was January of 2004, so almost a year into the invasion.
Who actually paid for this trip?
I raise the money between friends and family.
All right, fine. I'm glad that you are putting it up, because I'm always suspicious when some of the great tax-exempt foundations, the people of great wealth, are simply controlling both sides. So you went there as an independent. You wanted to find out what it was. And what did you learn from the Iraqi people? I mean, were they so grateful to the Americans for coming to free them from the wicked Saddam Hussein?
Well, after talking to hundreds of the Iraqis in my time there, I realized that a small majority actually welcomed us into their country as liberators. But after a short time, and also during the initial invasion, when they saw that the United States military was protecting the oil fields but not guarding essential infrastructure, such as the banks and the museums and their cultural heritage, the Iraqis pretty quickly came to realize the true reason for us being there. That, combined with all the other mistakes that happened, like you mentioned, the dissolving of the Iraqi army immediately under the CPA, and the lack of humanitarian aid that was provided, these Iraqis turned against us in short order.
And now, of course, we're told, the president claims we're fighting terrorism over there, and I wonder, are we really fighting terrorism? Are we fighting insurgents who resent America occupying their country, stealing their oil, and, of course, torturing their people?
Of course, that's another misinformation campaign by the administration. Study after study has shown that less than 10% of the fighters captured or killed in Iraq are from foreign countries. And, you know, Iraq never had any links to 9/11 or had any links with terrorism prior to this war. So we're, in effect, making the United States less safe because we're inviting all these terrorists, the small percentage that do come over, they get training, the Iraqis get training. We're inflaming tensions over there. We're creating hatred towards America where there was none before.
And I really feel that this is probably true. I believe that, you know, the Iraqis had a lot of goodwill for America, but we pretty well destroyed that nation. Certainly 1,800,000 of the upper-class people, or the middle-class people, have fled the country and are living in other lands. Most of the Christians have left. Almost 10% of the population was Christian, and they've all been driven out. Why? Because we are converting this from a secular nation into a radical Islamic nation, and where Sharia law will be practiced. And, of course, you know what happens to Christians where there's Sharia law. What's your impression of what's happened to the Christians there?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know the history of Iraq, and Iraq was actually one of our best chances of having a naturally formed, people-organized democracy. Even though Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator, the people eventually could have risen up against him, or he would have died, and the democracy could have formed. Iraq was one of the best chances in the Middle East for this to happen, because Iraq, before their wars with Iran and with us, in 1991, they were at the forefront of medical technology. In 1966, Iraq had the first kidney transplant in the Middle East. That, the lack of religious extremism, and all the other factors involved, really made Iraq our best chance for having a democracy that was naturally formed. And we've really managed to just screw that up. And now, where before, Sunnis and Shias were married together and living free and openly together, that's no longer possible. In fact, you have the Shia death squads running around the country, and Sunni death squads, to be fair, killing members of the other tribes and members of the other religious sect. And the general security is gone completely. People barely venture out of the house. If they do, it's only for short times to get essentials, water, black market gasoline to run the generators because there's no electricity, food, things like that.
Now, what about, of course, the availability of water and electricity?
Well, now, in order for gasoline to be purchased at a regular petrol station, the families actually have to take their car, get in a line, and I saw these lines myself, which sometimes are up to a mile long, wrapping around for blocks and blocks. They wait there all night long. The line barely moves. They sleep in their cars just to get a tank full of gas. So what the alternative is to buy the black market gasoline, which can cost as much as $5 or $6 a gallon, which is surprising considering that Iraq is oil wealthy.
All right. Well, what about the economy? What are people doing to make a living over there? Because we know that many of the middle class people have simply fled.
That's right. The essential people in the country of Iraq are leaving. especially the doctors. Many of the brightest minds in Iraq are fleeing to other countries such as Egypt and Jordan in order to pursue a life where there is security and where they don't have the threat of being killed just because of the particular religion that they practice.
Well, what about the Kurds? Now, my understanding is the Kurds, things are fairly good for the Kurds. You know, they have sort of their own autonomy there. They certainly don't want anything to do with either the Shias or with the Sunnis. They simply want their own country, and at least for all intents and purposes, the Kurds really have been allowed to at least have some degree of autonomy. What's your impression of Kurdistan? Do you have any contact with the Kurds?
I don't have any contact with Kurdish people personally, but I can tell you that they call it Kurdistan in Iraq. It's, the Iraqi people don't even really recognize it as part of their country many times because it's geographically different, just the type of land and the landscape up there. The people in the Kurdish region are largely autonomous in ways of government and also security and their military. They have the Peshmerga, which is their own private army of 100,000 military members.
Well, why don't we just let them have their own country? Why do we want to force them to be associated with people they don't want to be? It seems that, you know, one of the greatest mistakes of all time was after the First World War when Great Britain created this country intentionally to have something that was unstable so they could, of course, have constant turmoil over there. And they joined together artificially, the Shias and the Sunnis and the Kurds, none of whom wanted to be with the other. So you had to have a dictator, and then, of course, the British could play one group against the other. So why don't we, stepping in there, if we really believe in democracy, why don't we just let the Kurds have their own country, let the Shias have their country, and let the Sunnis have their country? Why do we want to try to force them all to be together?
Well, you're right. Much of the problem goes back to just after World War I when the lines were drawn to establish Iraq originally the way it is now. Unfortunately, it's not that easy because with the country divided, with the Sunnis being in the central part of the country in the west, and then the Shias being in the south and the Kurds being in the north, the resources of Iraq are not evenly divided. So the Kurds have more control of the oil up north. And, of course, if you split this country into three again, you're going to run into the same problem down the road eventually because of uneven distribution of wealth.
All right, fine. Well, what's your solution then?
Well, I don't claim to have all the answers. I wish it was that easy. But what I support is getting U.S. troops out of there as soon as possible because, like I said, we don't know what will happen when the U.S. troops leave, but we do know what will happen if they stay. The United States presence in Iraq is largely fueling the violence, and that's why we're seeing the situation that's been created today. I don't have any hope that it'll turn around. Some people are claiming that more troops will help, but you can't establish a democracy by bombing people and having the death of innocent civilians on our hands.
What figures do you have for the number of civilians killed? I mean, I've had some figures. I'd like to know what figures you're using at the present time. How many innocent civilians have been slaughtered since George Bush went in to bring freedom to the people there?
The numbers vary largely. I think perhaps the most accurate studies were those done by The Lancet, the medical journal out of the United Kingdom, which more than a year ago pegged that number in excess of 100,000, and I've seen other studies that have shown in excess of 200,000, and I believe those to be most likely the most accurate portrayal of the situation over there as to how many civilians have been killed in Iraq, because we can't just take a look at accidental Iraqi deaths or collateral damage from U.S. forces. We also have to look at the secondary and tertiary effects of this war, meaning the lack of medical equipment, the fact that doctors aren't available in the hospitals because they've gone to more secure countries. People are dying every day because of these reasons.
But President Bush says we've got to fight the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad. If we don't fight them on the streets of Baghdad, we're going to be fighting them on the streets of New York. Are you suggesting that that isn't true, that we're not keeping the terrorists at bay because we're fighting them over there?
Well, you know, the government in this country used the same argument during Vietnam, that if South Vietnam fell to the communists, then the rest of the surrounding countries were going to fall to communism. Well, you know, in 1975, we pulled out of Vietnam. The North Vietnamese took over, the communists, North Vietnamese took over, and the countries around it surprisingly, did not fall to communism.
And they didn't take over San Francisco either. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tim Goodrich. Tim, that's an excellent reply. And, of course, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can remember when I was young and foolish and idealistic, and I supported the government's war in Vietnam. But as I matured during the course of that, I began to realize it was all a lie. I was being manipulated by the organizations I belonged to and by my patriotic fervor. And the domino theory that was given to us at that time was not true. New Zealand and Australia and Thailand and Malaysia did not fall. And that communists did not end up in San Francisco as we had been promised. It was all a lie. And, you know, but it doesn't really matter, you know, how stupid or foolish something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. The president keeps telling us over and over again, we have to fight, you know, over in Iraq. We either fight the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad or the streets of New York. And I agree with you totally. That is totally fallacious. So, you know, I agree we've got to get our troops out of there, but I don't think we're going to. I believe that the plan is to have our troops permanently stationed there, and it doesn't really matter what the American people think. It doesn't really matter what, you know, the members of Congress and the Senate think in their heart of hearts. The plan is laid out. It's laid out by the Project for the New American Century. You can pull it down from the web. It's called Rebuilding America's Defenses, and there they call for the permanent stationing of American troops in Iraq, irrespective of whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not. And the average American doesn't understand everything is part of a massive plan. You pick up your story. I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
Well, all these reasons that we just talked about is why I formed this political action committee called Iraq Veterans for Progress. And the website, by the way, is www.iraqvetsforprogress.org. And what we aim to do with just 2 months before the elections here, November 7th, is get our message into the media and especially into these districts where candidates are having close races. And we plan to support these candidates that want to change the course in Iraq. Our candidates support the building of no permanent bases in Iraq, the replacement of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. They renounce the practice of preemptive war. They ensure veterans get the benefits they deserve. They practice diplomacy first, and they want to bring the troops home. And I don't think anybody can argue with those goals right there. So what we're doing is we're taking donations online at that website, and we're sending unemployed Iraq veterans to go work on their campaigns, and that's our political contribution to the campaign, hoping that our contribution will help enough to put them over the edge, win their races, and we can finally have new discourse about Iraq here in the United States.
Well, now, how many races are you targeting?
We plan on endorsing 5 to 7 races. So far, we've endorsed 2, and we're talking to other campaigns.
All right, fine. So, of course, you've got to get about 30 people in there to actually take over the House of Representatives to break the Republican control. And, of course, as long as we have Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate, they go right along and they back the president, who is the largest spender we've ever had. He's increased government more than any Democratic president ever had. And how Republicans can back him, I just find difficult to believe, but there's so many people out there who are doctrinaire Republicans. It doesn't matter what they do, we're going to back them right to the hilt. And have you run into that? And just hold that thought for a minute. We'll be back in just a moment with Tim Goodrich, who's really trying to do something. And we'll, of course, you'll let him put out his information once again on his website and how they're trying to collect funds. Go ahead.
It's Iraq Veterans for...
All right, Dr. Stan, our guest is Tim Goodrich. Tim, get your website out there, what you're trying to do, what you'd like people to do in response to your plea, and then we'll talk more about it. And of course, we'll welcome our calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But go ahead, Tim.
The organization is called Iraq Veterans for Progress, and the website is www.iraqvetsforprogress.org, and what we're trying to do is make a difference in the November 7th elections by placing unemployed Iraq veterans on campaigns where the races are very close. We're only supporting those campaigns who want to change the course in Iraq, and you can see all our objectives on the website. But this isn't about politics and who's in the House and who's not. It's about supporting candidates who want to do the right thing.
All right, fine. And, Chris, your website, once again, and you're actually asking people to make donations to your website?
That's right. Anything that anybody can afford will go a long way, especially since there's less than 60 days left until the election. www.iraqvetsforprogress.org.
All right, fine. And, Chris, what you really want, of course, is to get candidates in who will vote to get out of Iraq. Is that a fair statement?
I'm sorry, I said that again.
You want to elect candidates to Congress who will actually try to get our troops out of Iraq.
Yes, that's right. And that's our best hope for establishing or reestablishing a secure Iraq.
All right, fine. Really, what's your take on the attitude of the American people? I mean, there are an awful lot of Americans who, of course, may be unhappy with the things are going in Iraq, but they support the president because he's done such a great job in preventing terrorism. After all, since 9/11, we haven't had one single terrorist attack in America. The borders are wide open. Anybody can come across, and yet we haven't had any terrorist attacks, so the president must be doing a good job.
Well, I wish the American public was in a different state of mind than what they are today. This apathy across America makes me sick.
Well, I know how you feel. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, only 0.5% of American people have any involvement in this war at all, meaning that they're actually serving in the military. And that's different compared to any time in history. It used to be, especially in World War II, where you saw entire families going off to war, and they were involved in it. And they would come home and tell their stories, and people would hear the reality of it, and the case could be made that World War II is a just war. So now it's a different time, though, and this apathy is terrible. People need to wake up. People need to realize that if it's not affecting them because their brother or sister that's serving in Iraq is being killed, it's affecting them because their security is being taken away by inflaming the tensions in the Middle East, number one. And second of all, their freedom to drive on good roads, their freedom to good public education is being taken away by the fact that this country is becoming bankrupt partially due to this war.
All right, fine. Well, of course, then what sort of response are you getting from people as you plead to them? With a very legitimate reason, very concerned, because this country, this war is bankrupting the United States, not only, of course, financially, but what really bothers me most, morally as well. So what sort of response are you getting from people? Because I know you're appearing on, certainly on radio programs across America.
Well, Americans, and polling shows this, the majority of Americans are against this war and do want the troops to come home. I think the last poll showed 61 or 62% feel that way, but we're not seeing those numbers in the street. We saw that before the war. We saw millions of people marching in the street before the war. And we were largely ignored, and I think that contributes to the feeling of helplessness. But that's partially the reason why I formed this political action committee, because while politicians can ignore millions of people in the streets, they can't ignore votes. And if we put the right people into positions of power and knowing that they'll vote the right way, we'll be better off.
Well, now, who are you actually backing so far?
Well, so far we have Jerry McNerney. He's running against Richard Pombo in California's 11th district. That's Tracy Stockton, Northern California area. And his opponent, Richard Pombo, to give you an idea of where he stands on the Iraq War, on his campaign website and his congressional website, he doesn't even mention Iraq. That is not on his issues page whatsoever. I think the American people need to be told the truth about what's happening over there, or at least know his position by going to one of his websites. So Jerry McNerney, he's got a son that's in the Air Force, and he's got a plan to get out, as well as our other candidate, Bruce Braley, in Iowa's 1st Congressional District. That's Eastern Iowa, and he's running for an open seat. But his opponent basically says that same old tired argument from the Bush administration that's been recycled from Vietnam, saying that if we don't fight the terrorists in Iraq, that they're going to come over to the United States.
Well, of course, the thing is that a lot of the Republicans running for Congress know they're not going to get any support from the Republican National Committee unless they go along with the president. And if they were to stand up and buck him, the Republican Party would run people in the primary against them with unlimited funds, so they wouldn't have a chance of even getting the primary through the primary. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Tim Goodrich, who's actually trying to do something as far as what's happening politically. And, of course, they're trying to run candidates against in districts where they feel that the candidates are certainly not taking a position on the war. Well, how is Pombo voted on appropriations for the war? Do you know?
I don't have his voting record in front of me, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that he's voted for appropriations every time that they've come up.
I see, but we really don't know exactly how he's voted on that.
Right. Unfortunately, when these defense appropriations bills and these supplemental bills come up to send more money over to Iraq, the false argument is made that you have to vote for them because if not, our troops will suffer. Well, that's just false. The way that
but most of the Democrats are voting for him right along with the Republicans. If they certainly couldn't get them through, you know, a lot of the Democrats weren't supporting this as well.
That's right. That's unfortunate because they're having a hard time countering this false argument that our troops will be hurt if we don't vote for the money going over there.
And in fact, the Democrats have gone right along with the Republicans. In fact, when Congressman Murtha wanted to say that we should pull our troops out, the Republicans immediately put up a piece of legislation recommending that we pull our troops out immediately. Now, knowing you could not pull them out immediately, you'd have to phase the withdrawal over at least a matter of several months. And even the Democrats wouldn't vote for this, and they left a poor Congressman Murtha there, who I think is a very sincere individual. He's a Marine Corps veteran, retired as a colonel in the Marine Corps, and they left him sitting. He was betrayed not only by the Democrats, but certainly by the Republicans. He was betrayed by everybody because he wanted to do, I think, what was right.
Yes, and I'd agree with you. Representative Murtha is an honorable man. He spent 37 years in the Marine Corps. I think it's safe to know he knows a thing or two about not only foreign policy, but also the U.S. military. And it's unfortunate seeing these Republicans come out and bash him and try to slam him, just like they did John Kerry with the 527 organization, Slipboat Veterans for Truth, in the 2004 election.
Well, but the Democrats didn't back him either. In other words, they undercut him in every way. In other words, they went right along. They pretended to be against the war, but when push came to shove, they didn't back Murtha at all. They left him there, and they refused to back this idea of getting the troops out. So a lot of it's talk, a lot of it's show. It looks like we got sort of a one-party system with the leaders of both parties backing this war. We'll be back in just a moment with Tim Goodrich here talking about his effort to try to do something, a progressive approach to what's going on today. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tim is, of course, trying to do something from his point of view about what's going on. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to comment at all, Tim feels we need to get the troops pulled out as soon as we can. How rapidly would you get the troops pulled out, Tim?
Well, because of logistical concerns, it's going to take a minimum of 90 to 120 days, 3 to 4 months. We can't just immediately pack everybody up in vehicles and ship them out. We need to take our equipment with us. We need to make sure that it's done in a safe and responsible manner. I don't think anybody can argue with that.
Well, of course, so, if we pull out, if we don't leave that equipment for the Iraqi army, there's going to be an absolute anarchy in the country. In other words, we have done a very, very poor job of intentionally, and I believe it's been intentional, of not training the Iraqi army. Because if you had an Iraqi army, how could you justify being there? And I believe that the entire intent has always been to have troops permanently stationed there, which is why we're building these massive embassy and massive military camps, because we want to stay there indefinitely. So if we tried to pull out, and we did not, of course, leave a lot of our equipment for the Iraqi army, there'd be no way that they would be able to maintain law and order until such time as they can develop a stable government. I mean, you've got all these private armies circulating over there.
That's right. Actually, the second largest force in Iraq right now, the second largest military force in Iraq right now is not the British. It's private contractors, mercenaries.
What are they doing over there? And why are we paying a mercenary army to be there, and who are they answerable to?
Well, that's a really good question. I think part of the reason this war was fought is because in war, corporations make money, and under our current political system, money talks. So it's only fitting to see Halliburton and Bechtel and Cocky and all these other private military contractors fighting this war in Iraq. There's, by some estimates, 20 to 30,000 in Iraq right now. And to answer your question, they're not answerable to anybody. Any crimes that they commit go unanswered. They can't be prosecuted under law.
Well, I would think that there would be some sort of international law. And if these people commit atrocities, we know that the CIA has committed lots of atrocities. In fact, they were behind everything that went on in Abu Ghraib, but of course they weren't punished. A few of the lower, non-commissioned officers and soldiers were sent to prison, but never the CIA people who ordered them to commit these terrible atrocities. They were never tried or punished. So I think that we have a disparity here, and I'm very concerned. Well, so anyway, you would want to, 90 to 120 days to pull out?
I think that that's completely reasonable, and not only reasonable, but it would be good for the safety and the responsibility factor.
Well, of course, but
the main thing is we need to change the course in Iraq. We need to make it clear to the Iraqis that we don't intend to have a permanent presence, because right now they think that we're there to occupy them, and really, quite frankly, we can't blame them for thinking that because of our track record. And once we make it clear to the Iraqis that we're not going to stick around forever, I think a lot of this violence will subside.
All right, fine. So you think then that they would be able to form some sort of a stable government if the occupying forces were removed? Do you think that there's any chance you're going to do that? Because it's very obvious that President Bush intends to attack Iran, and he's going to need a base there in the Middle East for the attack on Iran. So don't you think they're going to do everything they can to circumvent the efforts of the people who want to get our troops out?
Well, we've seen that time and time again, and I don't see anything in the future that would lead me to believe differently. President Bush himself has even said that it's up to the next president in 2009 to decide when the troops come home.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and I think that Tim's point is very good. President Bush has no intention of pulling our troops out. In fact, he has said, and I think Tim's point is well made, that it's going to be the next president who will come in 2009 who's going to have to think about getting our troops out. So why in heaven's name are we going to keep our troops there? I mean, let's go to Dan, who's calling us from Texas, and get his thoughts. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Do you have a question or comment?
There was some talk earlier about your show about do the Iranians and the Iraqians and the Kurds, do they want us there? And I'm a veteran and go to VFW meetings and Disabled American Veteran meetings, and I've met some of these guys, and they're real good buddies with them, with their houses and everything. And they do want us there. I mean, anyone that thinks that the Iranians, the Iraqians, the Kurds, they want us there and terrified of us leaving. They want us there. I don't know why people on your show come up and say they don't want us there.
I see.
Do
the Iranians really want us to stay right there?
Oh, my God.
Why would the Iranians want to stay us there?
They think they can have a country worth living in if we get rid of all these scum. And no one can do it but us. They can't do it without us, and they know it. The Kurds love us. They love us to death, obviously. And, I know several of them. If I could even have them talk to you. They won't talk on the air. I asked them to talk to you on the air, but they're afraid of reprisals back at home. That's how thoroughly these criminals work over there, you know.
Do you think that the majority of Iraqis want us to stay there?
Yes, sir. I can have him call you and talk to you in person,
all
off
right,
the air.
Let's have Tim reply to that. Tim, go ahead. You've been there. You've talked to the people. What's your impression?
Well, like I said earlier in the show, I talked to hundreds of Iraqis, just everyday Iraqis, out on the streets of Baghdad while I was there. And mind you, this was more than 2 years ago when the situation was better than what it is now. And after almost a year of occupation and a small majority of them initially welcoming us, overwhelmingly the people of Iraq at that point said that they wanted the U.S. to leave. And this is not only my own first-hand account, this is also many, many other Iraq veterans that I talk to. I get emails from Iraq on a daily basis from soldiers fighting over there saying, keep on doing what you're doing. You're the ones that are going to bring us home. These Iraqis, they don't want us here anymore. I can cite polls that were done by the British military showing that more than 80% of the Iraqis want the occupying forces out. Just thing after thing after thing. We're not making it any better over in Iraq right now. The security continues to decline. It's time to bring our troops home.
Dan, Serbia, the military has announced they're going to have to be pulling out of Anwar province because they cannot, of course, control it there. If they really want us there in that area, why is the military going to abandon Anwar province?
Well, they're simply putting under too much pressure and can't take it.
Overall,
they want us there. I can get you to talk to guys here in Houston that are Iranians. They've had relatives and brothers hung and executed.
But Dan, we're not in Iran. I mean, Iran is an entirely different country.
Well, I mean both countries, Iran and Iraq.
You keep stressing that the Iranians want us there in Iraq. Why would the Iranians want us to remain in Iraq?
Well, the ones I've talked to, those countries are the same country as far as the people are concerned. Like, they grew up out in the desert, and there's no red line right between the countries. Both countries out in the desert, where there's no distinction. They just think of themselves as citizens of both countries.
You mean you're talking. Remember, the Iranians are Persians. Of course, the Iraqis, most of them are Arabs.
Well, the Persians and Iraqis are both. They're just scattered everywhere. The Kurds are kind of like in the middle sometimes. But I can have you talk to the head of the Iranian culture group here in Houston. I went to a party with them 2 nights ago. My wife and I enjoyed it immensely.
And
they clearly want us there. I mean, I don't know how guys...
I think maybe they want us to straighten out the mess that's in Iran. But we are not in Iran. I think the first thing you have to realize is we're not in Iran. We're in Iraq, but we're not in Iran. They may want to straighten out the country of Iran, but we're not going to do it by staying in Iraq, I'll tell you. It's an entirely different situation. Iran is one country, Iraq is another. We have no troops in Iran. And do you really want to go to war with Iran, too?
Well, they think they would. It's the only hope they've got.
They're willing to fight to the last American soldier. They want us to send our boys in to straighten out their country in Iran.
Well, they want to do it too, but they can't do it without our help, no matter what the cost. That's the way it is. If it's not worth our blood, then it's back out and run. But they do want us there. I mean, that's the point.
I can give you both a couple of good reasons why some Iranians may want the United States to stay in Iraq. Number one, Iraq and Iran fought an 8-year-long war from 1980 through 1988. And, of course, there's going to be some bad blood and some unsolved disputes there where some Iranians may still dislike the Iraqi people and wish this occupation upon them. Secondly, the longer the United States forces stay in Iraq, the worse the situation gets in Iraq, and that includes lack of security and lack of a formidable government. That invites more influence across the border from Iran.
All right, first, how many American soldiers are you willing to sacrifice there in Iraq, Dan? I mean, another 10,000, another 20,000, 100,000, a million? Because if we get into a war with Iran, which is what you're suggesting, we could lose not only tens of thousands there, but there could be retaliations here in America that might cost us millions of lives. You know, when you start a war is a terrible thing, and when start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And I think that, as a Christian, I think that what we're doing is terrible. I don't know how you feel about it.
I
do not feel that we have a right to force our views onto other countries. The reason that they have trouble in Iran is because America went over there and replaced the Shah. First of all, we placed the democratically elected government of the Iran. In 1953, we threw out Mossadegh, we put in the Shah, then we threw out the Shah in 1979, and we put the Ayatollah Khomeini in. I think we ought to pull out of there completely and let the people solve their problems.
Well, what these guys will tell you, if you talk to them, I'll give you their phone number here in Houston, you can talk to them personally. The Shah of Iran was not as bad as the Ayatollah.
You're absolutely right, but you see, it was your State Department and Zbigniew Brzezinski who got rid of the Shah and brought the Ayatollah to power. And that's the real problem, and the American State Department brought together this radical Islamic government that is creating the terrible suffering in Iran. I appreciate your calling, and there is truth in what you say.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
There is a solution, and they all agree to it, and it's already been done by Saudi Arabia. And the solution is that desert is so stinking huge over there. I mean, it's immense. And Saudi Arabia did this. They built cities, entire cities with skyscrapers in some of them, hundreds of miles from the other one. And the people go live there. They want to live there. They're sick of guns. They don't want to see another gun. And they have their communities out there in Saudi Arabia where there's no crime. Everything is bliss. And you can do the same damn thing in Iran and Iraq. You can go out there and Halliburton and build enormous cities like German countries evolved. And it would work overnight.
But where's the money going to come from, Ted?
The same place Saudi Arabia got it, from the oil they got over there.
I see. Fine. Okay. Thank you so very much. Appreciate your call. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, here's a dissenting voice. Tim, how would you like to respond to what Dan's saying? He says that we ought to stay there, and we ought, of course, to stay in, right there in Iraq, and then maybe we ought to invade Iran to bring peace and prosperity to Iran, and then build these multi-story buildings, skyscrapers all throughout Iraq using their... But, we've been there for 5 years, and the country's still pretty much in rubble.
Well, I think what the caller needs to do is take it from people who have served over there firsthand and have talked to the Iraqi people. Like I've already told you my story, but also we can even look at the political situation coming up for November here in the United States. There's a couple dozen Iraq veterans running for seats in Congress across the United States, and more than 95% of them are running on the Democratic ticket and saying that we need to change the course in Iraq and bring our troops home. I think that's pretty telling. And that's what we're trying to do with Iraq Veterans for Progress, is get those candidates in office so that we can change the course in Iraq and bring our troops home.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly think that what we want to do is get out of Iraq. We never should have gone in the first place. And, of course, when you get into the quicksand, you've got to get out, or you're going to get sucked in. I really fear that the next target is Iran. I think this is part of a long-range program. I believe that Syria is in the crosshairs of the site, and but I feel so sorry for the people of Iraq. I mean, we've killed, in the name of bringing them democracy, we've probably killed at least 100,000 of them. I mean, I wonder how people we would feel if somebody came into our country and tried to liberate us from our government and then killed 100,000 of our people. Would there be Americans, of course, would be acting as insurgents against the foreign occupiers, and I think there would be.
To be fair, we have to compare apples to apples here, and remember that Iraq only has 25 million people, whereas we have 300 million people. So to make the comparison, if Iraqis lose 100,000 people due to this war, it'd be the equivalent of the United States losing 1.2 million people.
Well, I think it's a tragic situation, and I see very little hope that it's going to get better. I certainly don't think that what you're doing, I respect you, Tim, for at least doing something and not just sitting back there and certainly rubbing your hands together and saying nothing can be done. I think that we may very well see a shift in the Congress this November, and I think we may very well see a shift in the Senate this November. I think what we need in Washington, D.C. is gridlock. I think what we need in Washington, D.C. is a two-party system with some opposition to the current president's position, but I fear that the Democratic leadership, even though we may get new Democrats in there, the Democrat leadership will go right along with the agenda. And because I think we have basically a one-party system with two branches, one's Democrat, one's Republican, but their overall agenda is exactly the same. The Democrats pretend to be against the war, but look and see how they voted on most of these issues. That is the tragedy. I mean, they could have withheld the funds. They could have gotten enough support to withhold the funds, and they've got right along with the Republicans, because there's a much bigger agenda than the average American knows. As in fact, President Bush has said, this is just the war in Iraq is part of a much larger war. Do you believe that?
Well, there have been many accusations that Iraq is just part of a larger war in the Middle East to establish U.S. dominance across the region, especially referring back to Project for a New American Century, which you mentioned earlier. Even Seymour Hersh, who has been incredibly accurate in his reporting and has close connections going back to the My Lai incident in Vietnam, has stated that our war, the Israelis' war in Lebanon, was a test run to see how the weapons would work against Iran, for the U.S. to go against Iran. And we're living in dangerous times under a dangerous administration, and I can only hope that something changes politically in November so that we have relative safety compared to where we are now.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you agree with Tim or you disagree, give us a call. We've got time for one more caller. And I think that basically we're seeing a very, very tragic situation in the Middle East. What really disturbs me is, and I think Tim would agree, that more Americans aren't concerned. We want to just live our life and be left alone. But I believe men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And whether you agree or disagree, you should be involved. Because the issues here will determine, I think, the sort of nation we are, the nation we will become. And this, of course, continued war in the Middle East is going to bankrupt the United States, and especially if we expand the war into Iran, as I believe they're planning. Well, Tim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program and get your telephone number and website up one more time.
Well, you know, there's a famous quote alluding to what you just said before the break here, and it goes like this: all that's necessary for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And after coming back from Iraq and seeing what I saw over there and my experience in the military, I realized that in good conscience, I couldn't sit back and do nothing. So, that led me to co-found Iraq Veterans Against the War, and being more involved in politics now, I've founded Iraq Veterans for Progress. The website is www.iraqvetsforprogress.org, and we really need your help. We have less than 60 days to change the course in Iraq, or to change the course of the elections in November so that we can eventually change the course in Iraq and bring our troops home.
Well, I admire you for what you're doing, for trying to do something, for trying to be involved. And I believe the answer to what we have is we've got to educate the American people. Not only do we educate them, we've got to make them care. We've got to make them realize that men and women have to be involved in this thing. If we're not involved, then we lose by default. And there really are people out there who have a different agenda, who have, I believe, a truly diabolical agenda, who want to expand the war. And, you know, if you study the histories of the wars the last, couple of hundred years, you realize that wars start out one way. And everybody thinks they're going to be short little wars. They refer to the Boer Wars, Milner's Tea Time War. Hey, remember, they'll be home by Christmas. They just didn't say which Christmas, and 3 bloody years and 100,000 British casualties later, the war did end. I remember, of course, Korea. Our boys will be home by Christmas. They just didn't say which Christmas, and 44,000 or 48,000 Americans deaths later, and of course, how many of those boys were abandoned and left to die in the Soviet prison camps, where they were used for human experimentation, we will never know. Our government knows, but of course, we will never be allowed to know. Terrible things happen in war, and the one thing that I've learned from my study is that there really are people out there who want to see horror and carnage and bloodshed, and there really is an evil force out there that wants war, and we have a moral obligation to oppose it. Tim Goodrich, thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you for having the courage to take a stand, and thank you for being involved at this time in history.
Thank you for having this opportunity.
God bless you. Bye-bye, Tim. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Tim Goodrich, and he's out there trying to do something. And I would simply ask, what are you trying and willing to do? Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I need to remind you Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you can, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you do, you get our monthly newsletter, and you'll really enjoy the August newsletter. I'm just finishing it up today. It has a surprise ending, an ending you really won't suspect. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get the either the tapes or the CDs of the month. That's what you, if you join the Radio Liberty family, that's what you get. Or you can simply subscribe to the newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll send you one. Of course, you can always pull it down off the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, we want to once again remind you about our annual conference. It's going to be held on the 29th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And, of course, if you're coming from outside and need accommodations, let us know. We also would point out that we're going to have some excellent speakers, Constance Cumby, Chris Pinto, who actually produced The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Barrett Schultz will be there. It'll be a great time held by all. And then, of course, we also want to mention we are carrying emergency foods, we're carrying health products, and if you'd like to get the catalogs for either of those or a regular catalog, we'd be glad to send them to you. You need to have the information. You need to have access to these things. And, of course, this is what helps us to actually be able to continue carrying on, bringing the truth out on some 60 stations every single week. So we do hope that many of you will tell your friends about our programs. We hope that you'll certainly want to get some of our pamphlets. We have pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. You know, who really rules the world? Is it, of course, the people of great wealth? Well, yes, they play a part. But behind these people of great wealth, many of these people have actually sold their souls. And I'm not talking about imaginary. I'm talking figuratively. You need to get the pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. There are three pamphlets in a set. Of course, you need to get some of our writings on this subject. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will introduce you to the other dimension. Certainly, the Beautiful Side of Evil, our four tapes set on the supernatural, the new book we're carrying by Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. The Hostage to the Devil is actually a compilation of the stories of six exorcisms or five exorcisms that were documented by the Catholic Church. And you can either get the book Hostage to the Devil or the Malachi Martin special, which includes my four interviews with Malachi, plus the book. We hope you want to get the Malachi Martin special. And we want to begin to understand the true nature of our enemy. Certainly, we have all sorts of organizations out there. But what nobody really wants to talk about is the spiritual force that energizes these organizations that are leading the world into World War III. It's almost as if there's a cosmic timetable out there, because so many of the things that are taking place don't make sense. I mean, President Ahmadinejad of Iran does all these irrational things, like talking about wiping Israel off the face of the earth and announcing that they now belong to the nuclear club because they can enrich uranium when they can't do it. Why would he do that if he wasn't trying to, you know, invite an attack on Iran? And then Iran, to help President Bush get reelected, has said that they're going to stop their enrichment program for 8 weeks. Why 8 weeks? Why, to get George Bush through the election, of course. Because, you see, they're trying to get George Bush to attract Iran, and that nothing makes sense from a logical point of view. But if there's a cosmic script, of course, that's being followed, everything does make sense. So you need to go to our website, you need to read our material, and then, of course, you need to pray for America. You need to pray for revival. You need to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision, and certainly for our protection. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs, MP3, blog site, and, of course, then until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.
Good morning. Welcome to the Power Hour. Well, you know what that music means. Without Dave's voice, yeah, he's still in New York City, but he'll be home today. A lot going on. New York City, Washington, D.C. Yesterday in Washington, D.C., how many of you all saw the demonstrations that were being held? I don't think anybody. Yeah, Marie Gunther called me last night and said, I've been watching all day on all six networks, and I cannot find anything about protesters or demonstrators. And I said, yep,